compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hello, and welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. I hope you enjoyed your 21-hour break. I did. Cyrus did, from all appearances, and we are ready to hit it again. The number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Lines are open right now. Yesterday, we talked a little bit about something we've talked a fair amount about over the last year or so, and that is the possibility of vaccine passports. Now, whether you have no problem with vaccines, maybe you're concerned, wherever you fall on the spectrum, in a way, it really doesn't matter because it looks like it's shaping up to be the reality of a vaccine passport being in place for at least some things that you do in regular life. And we'll get a little bit of audio that'll explain what we're talking about here. Fox 32, Chicago, they have an interesting story about this as it pertains to Chicago. And we have a massive listener base in Chicago. So this is something that is underway at the moment. Chicago's top doctor on yesterday, said she expects the city to roll out a type of vaccination passport that would allow people, particularly young adults, to attend concerts and other events this summer and going forward. Now, we have some audio from her, so I'll let her speak for herself. Cyrus, we have what, maybe three clips of this lady?
Yeah, I pulled three small clips here. So this first one, and they're all from the same informational press conference.
Right. This is Dr. Allison Arwadi.
All right.
And she is, she's named in the article as the top doctor for Chicago.
And she's literally saying, if you want to be part of the fun, you're going to need to get vaccinated.
Yeah, it's not mandatory. My goal at this point is to say, you want to be part of the fun, get vaccinated.
Okay. And she's not done.
People Wait.
Cyrus, I have a question. Do you want to be part of the fun?
I miss concerts. Yeah, I want to be part of the fun.
Concerts and what other kinds of things this could extend to? Maybe restaurants and
it already is. I saw another clip of a manager of a restaurant saying he's only going to let people into the restaurant that have the vaccination card.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's listen to Dr. Arwadi continuing with her comments.
People in particular may be excited about the idea of getting into events, for example, that might be limited to people who are vaccinated.
Yeah, it might be.
Are you excited about getting into events?
I am excited about getting into
too.
Events. Yes, I am.
I am too. I totally am. And I'm also excited about not being sick, and I'm totally excited about other people not being sick. So there's a lot about this that's exciting. Especially after the year that we've had.
Yeah.
But I'm not so sure this is the right way to get to that point. We'll see, but this is what they're talking about.
And they're specifically marketing it towards young people. I mean, older folks like us also like going to shows, but nobody likes going to shows more than, you know, that 18 to 24 crowd. And so they know that, and this is a very specifically targeted demographic, as she says right here.
A lot of this would probably have a youth flavor to it. We're working with some club organizers and others, and there will be more information coming.
Why do some people always say everything as if it were a question? And we're working on some other things, and we're going to be doing this? And then, why do they do that? That's an affectation.
Youth flavored. What a strange word she used there.
A lot of this would probably have a youth flavor to it. We're working with some club organizers and other.
Do you have any more youth audio
flavored.
For me?
That's it.
And that actually was enough? A question. That is enough. Thank you, Dr. Arwadi. She says the Vax Pass would likely debut next month. She says, as you just heard her say, you want to be part of the fun, get vaccinated. She says, I would hope that for most people, their main incentive is to be able to stay healthy, keep their families healthy, keep their communities healthy. I'm all about that. But she says, we also know younger people in a particular way are excited, as you heard her say, about getting into events. And that might be limited to people who are vaccinated. The announcement comes on the same day that Illinois reported more than 2,500 new COVID cases and 23 additional deaths. Dr. Awadhi also mentioned a program in the works called Vax and Relax. It doesn't sound very relaxing. Here, let me stick this needle in your arm and just relax.
You want to be part of the fun? Get vaccinated.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just saying I'm not a big needles guy. That's all. That's all I'm saying. I don't know too many people who like sticking a needle in their arm. Vax and Relax. She says you'll be hearing more about Vax and Relax, which is going to be some work partnering with barbershop salons, nail salons, thinking about giving people free haircuts and nail treatments and pairing that with vaccination. Our goal is to work to bring vaccines to people and build that confidence and build that convenience. In addition, public health officials in Chicago hope more opportunities and incentives to get a COVID-19 vaccine will improve the vaccination rate among people older than 65 and in the city's largely Black and Latino communities. I'm relieved that they didn't put the ridiculous Latinx nonsense. They just spelled the word as it's properly spelled, Latino. She said 65% of the city's residents older than 65 have received at least one dose, lower than the 81% rate among that age nationwide, that age group. She says also highlighted lagging rates of people who have received at least one dose in neighborhoods in the city's south and west sides. The data for the city of Chicago as of the beginning of the week showed 43% of Chicagoans have received their first dose and 29% were fully vaccinated. So Vax and Relax, Cyrus, or something like that. And I guess you'll be able to get your... What's it going to be? Is it going to be a digital thing on your phone? Have they said yet? I don't remember if she said whether it's a piece of paper or something on your phone.
Didn't we just see something last week from the White House that said this isn't going to happen?
We saw that, as a matter of fact. That, you know, it's
my
this
head's
is
spinning.
A problem with conflicting messaging. It's hard to know. It's hard to know for sure, but by the way, Cyrus, if you do like apps, I have a feeling you won't like this app. This is the Chinese Communist government. They've launched a new app that encourages citizens to report dissidents for expressing quote-unquote mistaken opinions on the internet. You never post in Chinese on the internet, do you, Cyrus?
Only that one time.
Okay. Oh, just the one time. That's the only time you'll admit to. The new platform will target anyone who criticizes the dictatorship's ruling CCP, it disputes the official version of the country's history, or anyone who engages in quote-unquote misinformation. The new website and app was proudly unveiled by China's Cyberspace Administration, with authorities calling on users to play an active role in helping to identify malicious people distorting facts and confusing others. Mm-hmm. For a while now, the announcement said, this is an announcement, of course, from the China Cyberspace Administration. For a while now, some people with ulterior motives have spread historically nihilistic false statements online, maliciously distorting, slandering, and denying party, national, and military history in an attempt to confuse people's thinking. We hope that most internet users, they say, will play an active role in supervising society and enthusiastically reporting harmful information. Oh, Cyrus, you just know that there are some people who really, really want to supervise other people hard, don't they?
You're not wrong.
They want to supervise,
yep,
in the hardest way possible. So anyway, this is happening in China. China already operates an onerous social credit score system that bans people from using transportation and engaging in other basic functions of society if they commit minor infractions like jaywalking or buying too much junk food. Given that social media mobs in the West, this is the article, it's editorializing here, but it's on target. I mean, it's happening even more so, and people are being encouraged, induced with emoluments to rat out their neighbors that they think are not being supervised hard enough. 888-914-9149. That's the number to call. Let's get to some phone calls. We'll start now with Bob in Austin, Texas. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Patrick. The question I had here recently in Lent, on Palm Sunday and on Spy Wednesday, the Gospels had the statement by our Lord about Judas. Mm-hmm. It'd be better for him if he had not been born. Mm-hmm. And I start thinking about that, and it just seems to me like that has some potentially seriously theological implications when our Lord is saying that someone should not have been born. It's almost like saying I shouldn't have made him. So, I mean, does it take you to the other end? If it's better not been born, does God offer people the opportunity to cease to exist rather than go to hell if they're choosing hell?
Yeah.
I mean, it just makes me wonder.
Yeah, no, I totally understand what you're saying. Now, that is one of the passages that traditionally we have turned to in search of an answer to the question, did Judas go to hell? So there are some who insist that no, Judas did not go to hell. But everything that I can see in Scripture, including that passage, seems to strongly suggest that, I mean, I don't see any other option there. If Jesus is saying that it would be better for that man if he had never been born, or in John chapter 6, did I not choose you 12 and yet one of you is a devil? He had some really pointedly negative things to say about Judas and his final destiny that I don't see how that can possibly lead toward the conclusion that Judas went to heaven. So you're raising a question that for some reason has sort of come back into vogue lately. I don't know why, but some people are debating whether or not, in fact, Judas went to hell. So I can say this much, that traditionally, historically, although the church never declared in any dogmatic way that Judas was in hell, although the Council of Trent, by the way, does refer to that a couple of times in the council proceedings. This is something interesting to take note of. I don't think that it's at all outside the bounds to assume, based on the information that we have, that he almost certainly did go to hell. And then we'll find out when the time comes. It doesn't affect you or me at all. But when the time comes, we'll find out. But I don't think there's anything untoward in interpreting those passages the way they strike you. That's the way most people in church history have looked at those passages.
And just following up a little bit, I mean, because I know our Lord is not going to say he made a mistake because he's God, he's perfect. I mean, he didn't make a mistake, so I'm not sure why he chose, even though he didn't speak English at the end, you know, so I don't know what the wording might be in Aramaic or Greek, but
well, it's all there. I mean,
not been born.
Yeah, and that is an accurate translation. So it's not as though Jesus was misquoted or anything like that. There is a passage, I mean, there are several passages where Jesus talks about what seems to be the final destination of Judas. So one would be John chapter 6, verse 70 that I just quoted, where Jesus says, did I not choose you personally, and yet one of you is a devil? So that's in John 6 at the very end of the Bread of Life discourse. Also in Matthew chapter 26, verse 24, when Jesus is being asked, who's going to betray you? And Jesus says, the Son of Man indeed goes as it is written of him, but woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. This is the passage you're referring to. It would be better for that man if he had never been born. And then what happens next? Judas, his betrayer, says in reply, surely it is not I, Rabbi. You have said so, said Jesus. And while they were eating, Jesus took bread and broke the bread, and we know what happened at the Last Supper. Then the last one is John chapter 17, verse 12. Now, this one is particularly striking. He's praying. This is the high priestly prayer to the Father. He says, Holy Father, keep them in your name that you have given me, so that they may be one just as we are. When I was with them, I protected them in your name that you gave me, and I guarded them, and none of them was lost except the Son of Destruction, in order that the Scripture might be fulfilled. Well, who's that? That's Judas. Judas is the Son of Destruction, and Jesus says none of them were lost except for him. So it's pretty plain that Jesus is saying that Judas was lost. I don't see how else you can interpret it, honestly. I don't see how you get right. Judas went to heaven out of that. I really don't. Not you. I'm not saying that to you, Bob. I don't feel like I'm badgering you.
No, I understand. Yeah, understand. Yeah. But anyway. Alrighty.
All right.
Well, thank you.
Well,
we
can only theorize and speculate, and we'll find out when the time comes. But just to put not too fine a point on it, I just scratch my head in bewilderment when I see people laboring mightily to try to rehabilitate Judas in the face of this overwhelming biblical evidence that I think suggests, to the point of no other real way of interpreting it, that he didn't go to heaven. But that's just me. Thank you, Bob. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Brian in Wausau, Wisconsin. Hello, Brian. Do we have Brian? Brian, are you there? Okay, Brian's not there. Let's go to Carol in Texas. Good morning, Carol.
Hi. I have a comment about the vaccine passport, but I was told to start with my question, which is related.
Okay.
I feel like our Catholic Church is urging us to get the vaccine. Not my local church, not my priest, but our Pope, because a simple internet search says things like Pope urges vaccine. He calls it our ethical obligation. But I'm very confused by this message, because we know the Johnson & Johnson vaccine was created using aborted baby tissue or DNA. And so that's why we ethically say, oh, that one's not good. But from all I understand of the experimental vaccines that are mRNA, is that many of them were also tested on aborted fetus material. So we literally do not know, when we're getting one of those Moderna or Pfizer vaccines, whether that was still unethical. And actually, for me personally, I think the fact that it's a gene therapy as opposed to a traditional vaccine using organic materials makes it fundamentally more unethical, because it's literally changing our DNA. And I thought, as Catholics, anything that kind of mutates what God gave us is frowned upon.
Well, let's pause there for a second. This is not the only legitimate medical therapy that is proposed that takes that approach. We're hearing a lot about it now just because everybody's paying attention to the issue of vaccines, certainly in the last year or so, and for good reason. But I'll just simply say this. The church at the highest levels has officially said this is permissible, and there's nothing inherently immoral about getting this vaccine. Now, there are other vaccines, of course, as well. But, I mean, who am I to second-guess the church? If the Pope says this and the bishops of the church say this, some of these bishops I know personally, and I've met and spoke to before, and I know that at least the ones that I'm thinking of anyway, because I can say this only because I know them personally, they're very Catholic and Orthodox men, and they're not going to say something that is wrong. They know better. So I personally am not going to contribute to anybody thinking that, well, if I get the vaccine, I'm doing something immoral, or because the church says, no, it's not immoral. And the church has given her reasons in a very detailed form. And that's the message I think that people need to hear. Now, I recognize, Carol, and maybe this might be part of, you know, the bigger picture of what you're saying. I recognize that there is an ongoing debate about the efficacy or the safety of vaccines as such, and what is in some of these vaccines. So I'm aware of that debate, and I've tried to stay somewhat current on it and try to read some literature so I could at least understand the debate back and forth. But I don't have a part in that debate, and I don't have the expertise to offer an opinion that's really worth much of anything. So all I can tell you with regard to this issue that you're raising right now is this is what the church says. This is what the bishops have said. And, I mean, I don't see any point in going beyond that. I mean, where else will you go? What else would you appeal to? I think we need to hear that message so that people can, if they decide to get vaccinated, assuming that the government at some point doesn't force vaccinations, it hasn't happened yet, but assuming that people still have the freedom to say yes or no, it should be an informed freedom that has taken into account the fact that the church has made this statement. I guess maybe I'm repeating myself now, but does that clarify at least where I'm coming from on this issue?
Yeah, I can understand your position. It's just, you know, if I was forced by the government, I would rather have the Johnson & Johnson, because that's an actual vaccine made with the actual, you know, mm-hmm. parts from the actual virus DNA, and it's a known therapy. It's not something that's going to change what I am fundamentally at the DNA level.
Well, see, that's not true either. That doesn't happen. The mRNA, first of all, you're talking about a vector vaccine, which is the traditional form in which a latent amount of that disease that you're guarding against is introduced into the body. It's dead and it can't hurt you, but the body builds the antibodies to fend it off so that if you ever get a live version, you'll be able to defeat it. The mRNA is, in this case, it sends the information to the cell to build a spike protein, which is the kind of spike that's on the coronavirus that we're talking about in this country. And as soon as this is done, basically, this dissipates. It goes away. It doesn't stay in your body. It doesn't rewire or change all of your DNA. It doesn't do that. That's a common misconception that many people labor under. Rather, what it does is it gives these instructions for the body to build this spike protein. And as soon as it does, it realizes, okay, that's bad, so we're going to fight that off. Then, at least in theory, anytime something like a COVID-19 were to be introduced into the body, it will recognize that and say, oh, spike protein, we've got to destroy that. But it is incorrect, at least based on all my reading on this issue, to say that this rewires your DNA and it changes you fundamentally. I have not seen anything that would suggest that that's true. So anyway, I'll leave it at that, Carol. I am at the point of having to take a break, but I do appreciate your calm consideration of this issue. Thank you. I'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
I feel compelled to bring this to your attention. This is from the New York Post a couple of days ago. There's a sign at George Floyd Square. This is in, obviously, in Minnesota. It's a placard at the entrance of what has now been named George Floyd Square, where he was murdered. And the sign says that this is a sacred space for community public grief and protest. It says, honor the space as a place to connect and grieve as caring humans. But in particular, it gives 5 orders for white people. It says, for white people in particular, decenter yourself and come to listen, learn, mourn, and witness. Remember, you are here to support, not to be supported. Be mindful of whether your volume, pace, and movements are supporting or undermining your efforts to decenter yourself. And white visitors are also ordered to, quote, seek to contribute to the energy of the space rather than drain it. Whatever that's supposed to mean. Bring your own process to other white folks so that you will not harm BIPOC. It's using an acronym for Black, Indigenous, and People of Color. I'm 100% Hispanic on my dad's side. I wonder, do I fit into that group? I'm not sure whether they would say that I do or don't. A 4th instruction on the placard at the George Floyd Plaza says it's an instruction to tell people to use caution when taking pictures for social media, especially without consent from the people in them. But this is addressed to white people in particular. And it says if you're witness white folks doing problematic things, speak up with compassion to take the burden off black folks and our siblings of color whenever appropriate. So I guess the white people are not considered siblings. I'm not sure what they're considered, but they're not siblings. The sign ends by saying, seek to engage rather than escalate. This whole sign is an escalation. Seek to engage rather than escalate so that it can be a learning moment rather than a disruption. The sign, of course, blew up on social media, causing a lot of outrage. One person tweeted, imagine what would happen if a 9/11 memorial gave similar instructions to Muslims. Another person said, nothing like trying to stir up more trouble. I can't imagine what would happen if any place had a sign posted with special instructions for black people. And another person tweeted, I thought this was about police brutality. And a woman named Bella, she insisted that the sign was the result of, quote, community efforts consisting of whites as well. I don't think so. I really don't think so. So I bring this to your attention. It's an example of one of the problems that we face nowadays. And I will reiterate the point that I've made before about this. And that is that racism is wrong regardless of who is being targeted and who is doing the targeting. If racism is wrong, and it is, if racism has no place in our community, and it doesn't, if racism is a sin, and it is, then it's true for anybody who commits the sin of racism toward anybody, whether you're white or any other ethnic background. And that's a fact. And we can't lose sight of that fact, even though there are many people out there who want to, if possible, change reality and make you believe that it's wrong if one group of people does it, but it's not wrong if another group of people does it. That's racist. That's racism. And I encourage you to stand against that type of folly. Sadly, many people are falling prey to it. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Tom in San Diego. Hello, Tom.
Good morning, Patrick. Two questions, please.
Okay.
Number one, is it does the church have any problem with Catholic reading the Gideon Bible?
No. And you're talking about the Gideon Bible that you might find in a hotel room, right?
That's right, exactly. As a matter mm-hmm. of fact, it was given to me at the hospital when I was in last year. Mm-hmm. And I have no problem with it. But somebody had mentioned on the air that there were certain Bibles that the church discourages people from reading, and I was wondering if the Gideon was one of them.
Well, in a strict sense, it is. I'm thinking of Rocky Raccoon, who checked into his room only to find Gideon's Bible. The reason Rocky Raccoon found Gideon's Bible in his room was because the Gideons are an organization that spends their time and money in making sure that there is a Bible in hotel rooms all around the country. In fact, all around the world, they do this wherever they can. And one of the reasons, I think it's a very good reason, is because they recognize that some really bad things happen in hotel rooms. And things that go down in hotel rooms sometimes are life-altering in a very bad way. And they recognize that sometimes people are at the end of their ropes. And by finding a Bible that they can maybe search for some meaning or encouragement, that for many people can be the difference between maybe suicide, for example, or a life of despair. So I applaud what they're doing. I think it's a good thing, and it has helped many people, no doubt. But the Gideons are a Protestant organization, and therefore they're using the King James Version of the Bible. We know that edition is the Gideon Bible for the reasons I just mentioned. And it's not inherently bad. I mean, there's nothing inherently bad about it, except that, number one, it's missing seven books from the Old Testament, the deuterocanonical books. And, you know, it's a translation with footnotes that's going to be somewhat tendentious, meaning that it will maybe translate some passages in a way that would lead the reader to understand it in a certain way as opposed to another way. A good example of that is where the Bible uses the word works, you know, that Ephesians 2 verses 8 through 9, for example, where it says, "For by grace you have been saved through faith. This is a gift of God. This is not of works." And there, the Greek word for works is translated as works. And then you go to, in some Protestant Bibles, you go to Romans chapter 2, where St. Paul says that everyone is going to be rewarded for his works. And it's the same word. It's the same Greek word. But in that place, they translate it as well-doing, because it would suggest to the reader, well, we're not talking about works. You know, it would kind of soften that. And that would be an example of a tendentious way of translating a Bible. And I'm not accusing the Gideons of being tendentious. All I'm saying is that because they're Protestant, naturally, they're going to promote Protestant versions of the Bible, the King James, as far as I'm aware. So as far as you're concerned, if you have a copy of it, I have any number of Protestant Bibles in my library, but I have them for reference. I don't use them for prayer or biblical study, but I use them as part of my work when it's necessary. And if you had some reason to want to refer to it to see, well, what does this version say? That's okay. The church doesn't say you can't do that. What the church discourages is using a Bible that has not been approved by the church in its translation, and also to some extent in the footnotes, because that's where you might be led down a different path of understanding if you weren't careful. And this was much more of a problem in years gone by than it is now. Let's face it, so many people no longer even read the Bible anymore. So it's a problem that has, in a sad sort of way, taken care of itself. But there's nothing harmful or sinful if you have a copy of that Bible, Tom. But if you want a Bible to do your daily devotions and to grow closer to the Lord in studying, I would use a Catholic Bible for the reasons I just mentioned. Does that make sense?
Well, yes, it does. It does. And I'll make a point of picking up a Catholic Bible then.
Great.
May I run another question by you?
Sure.
Ever since September of 1978, we've been told that Pope John Paul I passed away as a result of a coronary condition. Mm-hmm. In a book entitled In God's Name, An Investigation into the Murder mm-hmm. of John Paul I, a fellow named David Yellop indicated mm-hmm. that John Paul I was
murdered. Right. I'm very familiar with the book. I've read it a couple of times, so I'm familiar with the thesis. So what about that?
Well, the question is, where's the truth lie? An attack, or was he murdered?
Well, we don't know, and there's sufficient circumstantial evidence that could suggest that he was murdered. I remember when I first saw that claim, I rejected it as ridiculous. I read the book and I read it again because I wanted to understand Yallop's thesis on this. And although I don't buy into it, I can see why some people do, because there are certain things that were done and not done that are strange. So, for example, there are some serious inconsistencies in the stories about who found the body of Pope John Paul I. The original story, or at least the one that was public, was that a religious sister knocked on his door and kept knocking, but he didn't answer. So she went and got somebody who opened the door, and they found him dead in bed. She was bringing him his morning coffee and breakfast, I guess. That story turned out to have some real big holes in it. There were other things about, and it's been so long now since I've read the book, I'd have to go back and refresh my memory. But there are other things about how, in the aftermath of his death, things were handled that could suggest that maybe people were trying to cover up something. Then it gets into the whole Vatican Bank and Archbishop Paul Marcinkus and the Italians and others who were involved in financial scandals in the Vatican Bank, and a guy who hanged himself beneath a bridge in Rome because he realized the police were onto him. And the thesis that Yallop advances is that Pope John Paul I was murdered because he was about to do a couple of things, including, his thesis holds, expose the corruption in the Vatican Bank. And therefore, quote unquote, they whacked him. I don't believe that, but I could see why some people looking at the evidence might come to that conclusion. So in essence, that's where things stand. As far as I know, anyway, there's no police investigation that's ongoing into this, so I don't know if anything will ever come from this. But that book made a big splash when it came out, and a lot of people were tantalized by the possibility that, oh my gosh, maybe a pope had been killed. Let's keep in mind that would, you know, if it happened, and I don't think it did, but even if it did happen, by no means would that have been the first time that a pope had been murdered. All the early popes, let's say the first two or three dozen of them, roughly, were all murdered by the authorities for bearing witness to Jesus. So they were martyrs. But there were other popes, especially in the medieval era and later even, who were assassinated, who were poisoned. So even if Pope John Paul I met his end that way, and I don't think he did, it still would not be a first in the annals of papal history. I don't know if that makes anything better, but hopefully it makes it a little clearer. What do you think, Tom?
Well, you're shedding a light on it that's worth contemplation. And I want to thank you very much, Patrick, and
you're welcome, Tom.
All the work you do every day.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate the kind word. Yeah, I appreciate that. And I'm here for you every day, Monday through Friday from 8 to 11 Central Time, right here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. Well, I think There it is.
Checked into his room.
Great song, by the way. We'll be right back. Listen to this from the Beatles. I'll be right back. Bible. The programming you hear throughout the day on the Relevant Radio Network is sponsored in part by Christendom College. More info at getprinciples.com. We thank them for supporting Relevant Radio.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Hey, it's so good to have you listening to the program. Thank you. And tell your friends and family about the Patrick Madrid Show. It's as easy as just showing them where to download the app. Go to your app store and you can get the Relevant Radio app and listen to your heart's content. I was reminded when I saw this story about a roller coaster. This is in the UK. It's the largest roller coaster in the UK, 200 feet tall. It's probably dwarfed by some of the ones we have here in the United States. But anywho. I was reminded of a situation that happened to me. Here's the story. Theme park visitors were forced to climb down from the top of a 200-foot-high roller coaster at the Blackpool Pleasure Beach after it broke down mid-ride. Adrenaline junkies were left stranded at the highest point, 213 feet in the air. It's called the Big One. They had been on the notorious and agonizing, the article says, stretch of track traveling up to the top of the roller coaster when it suddenly stopped. That's a bad feeling. Take it from me. That's a bad feeling. I've been there. Cyrus, do you remember when I told that story about being trapped on a roller coaster with one of my sons?
I think so. It's been a while. I wouldn't mind hearing it again.
I don't even like to think of it. I'll just briefly recap. So something similar happened. I and one of my boys, who at the time might have been 9 or 10 years old, we got on a wooden roller coaster at Cedar Point, right on Lake Erie in Ohio. And it was a real tall roller coaster, and the same thing happened to us. We're going up, up, up. We get to the very highest part. You're on this ribbon in the sky, and it seemed like we were thousands of feet up. It probably only was a couple hundred feet, maybe. And it stopped, and it stayed stopped for the better part of an hour. And we were trapped because of the big bar. You know, you can't get out, and that's good because you don't want to fall out. But we didn't know what was going on, and this was pre-cell phone, so I couldn't talk to anybody. I didn't know what was happening. Nobody could call me, and my mind started working on me, and I got it into my head, and I think I'm a pretty calm, reasonable, sane person. I think most of us feel that way about ourselves, and at some point, it dawned on me, this roller coaster is all made out of wood, and it's going to catch on fire, and we will die. Because the whole roller coaster will go up in flames and we're going to burn. And we can't get out of this car. So I honestly had to really wrestle with that fear, which was completely irrational. I know it sounds funny. And it, you know, in the abstract, it sounds kind of funny, but I was terrified. And I'm not normally like that, is my point. And so 45 minutes or so went by, maybe an hour, and they climbed up this track, this you know, the stair steps all the way up to where we and the other people were. And we got out and we walked down, and it was weird because it was a very narrow set of stairs, and we were out there blowing in the wind. So that's my story.
That's terrifying. That, you know, my wife and I was sharing the story with her last night, and she's like, yeah, that happened to me and my brother. They were on a roller coaster, and it was one with a loop, and they had just reached over the top, and so they were... Like, you know, like...
Were they hanging upside down?
No. That was coming up. The loop was coming. So they're at the very... they're just over the tops, and they're in the very first cart. So the rest... most of the carts are facing up towards the sky. They're facing down towards the ground. And her brother's scared of heights. And so... And
they're way up there, I guess.
They're at the top. They're at the very, very top, looking down. So just over the top of the roller coaster. And the steps are... they would actually have to climb up and over the seats to get to the stairs.
Oh, my God.
And so...
and you could fall out at any time.
You can fall out at any time. And so they're like, well, how... we might have to climb over our seats, or they get this thing going again, and we're going to go around the loop at a very slow speed because there's not enough time to get momentum. And apparently, that's actually what happened, is they went around the loop slowly. And she still goes on roller coasters.
That actually sounds almost worse than that. Well, I'm going to share with you one quick story, as long as we're doing stories. I witnessed this happen. You know, at the, I think they got one at Knott's Berry Farm in Southern California, but the big pirate ships where half the people are sitting on one side, half on the other, and then it goes like vertical.
Those and you're are looking. Awful.
I used to like those.
Oh, count me out.
I witnessed, I'm not even going to tell you anything beyond this, but I witnessed somebody get sick on that ride.
And
my sister, one of my sisters was on it. It luckily missed her, but when you're, think of it, when you go, when your side goes up and your back is to the sky and you're facing straight down, that's where this guy was who got sick. He was facing down. And it was just the most horrifying thing.
Why did you share this?
I'm sorry. I retract that. Anyway, they had to get these people down off the roller coaster. And it was at the very top, and it was very scary. One person said, my brother's in Blackpool at this park. He sent a video of people stuck at the top of the big one having to get to walk down off to get off it. She said, I'd be welded to my seat. They'd have to get me out with a crane. A third person walking down the big one in Blackpool, at least they will get their steps done today. Yeah. So the reason I'm mentioning it is not for the gross out factor, but because I learned a lesson. And that for me was, we're more fragile than we realize. I mean, we probably all think that I got it all together. I would never crack. I would never be petrified over something that's irrational. And that's what I like to tell myself. And I think generally that's true for me and probably for you, Cyrus, I would guess. But in the wrong situation, it's amazing to me how fragile we really are. And that was the lesson I learned. This story reminded me of that.
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll move briskly along. And I bet you the next time you're at an amusement park, you're not going to get on the Viking ship, if I had to guess, or the pirate
never,
ship.
Never again.
Let's go to Anne listening in Colorado. Good morning, Anne.
Hi, Patrick.
Hi.
I wanted to talk to you. I feel like I'm on a roller coaster. I'm on deathly roller coaster right now.
Okay.
I just found out on Friday that my husband's on a dating app, and we've been married 24 years, and we've been through a lot. We've been through Retrovi. We've been through mm-hmm. Marriage Encounter. We go to counseling every 2 weeks, and I just discovered he's on a dating app. And
how did you find that out?
What is my...
I mean, not that it matters one way or the other. You didn't do anything wrong. I'm just curious how this came to light.
Sure. No, I sat down to order pizza online, and I found his email account wasn't logged out. And so something possessed me to click on his email account. And I found that he had an account with a dating app, and there was correspondence on his email account. And I asked him, and it denied it. And then I kept asking him, and then I kicked him out of the house. And then he admitted to having an account and corresponding. But he said that's as far as it went. But we have 6 children together. I just don't know what the right thing to do is at this point.
This is a terrible situation. I am assuming, Anne, that the only reason he admitted to that much of it was because he knew he was caught red-handed. And his track record is grim. He's got a track record of lying to you. If you're going to counseling every 2 weeks, I'm pretty confident this is not coming up in counseling, right? So whatever he's saying in counseling, I'm guessing is probably part of the bigger lie as well, right? Telling you what you want to hear?
That's all I can imagine, because I thought we were working towards a good marriage. And this just came out of the blue, and I'm so floored.
Mm-hmm. You have a right to be. And you have a right to not trust anything he says, because he's showing you by this deviousness that he's saying one thing and doing another and trying to not get caught. And when he gets caught, he says, oh, well, it was just, not that makes it any better. So what do you do? Well, I mean, naturally, I would recommend something like RetroVibe, but you've already tried that. I would recommend marriage and family therapy and counseling. You've already tried that. And not knowing anything more than what you've told me, and a little asterisk here, and I am not a counselor. I don't have the training to give you what a counselor could give you, but I can read the signs and tell you what I think personally. So my personal opinion would be, since he's demonstrated his utter lack of credibility, that he needs to go out of the house. I mean, I'm not saying divorce him. I would not encourage you to do that. You're still married, but he would need to earn the right, the privilege, to be back in good graces in the family home with you and the children. Because if he's lying about this, what else is he lying about? And there's no way to know. So yeah. I think you are within your rights as the wife to say, until and unless you get your act cleaned up permanently, you're not allowed to live here. I'm not divorcing you. I'm not walking out on our marriage. I'm not putting any of that in jeopardy. But I am saying that I can't trust you to live under the same roof as me and the kids. And until you change, that's how it's going to be. I could easily see a wife doing that. And maybe that's the kind of jolt he would need to turn things around. But it sounds like if he's doing this, then it will go from bad to worse.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. It's just terrifying. So I just didn't know, you know, thank you. I wanted an objective opinion. I have lots of voices telling me lots of subjective opinions. And so I needed an objective opinion. So
Thanks, Anna.
Just terrifying. So
I'm very sorry to hear that this is happening. Is there any man in his life that can sit him down and tell it to him straight? You know, you're being an idiot. You're on the high road to hell. You're destroying your marriage. You are betraying your wife and your children and everything you claim to stand for. You're completely betraying that. I mean, is there any man who could sit down and talk with him man to man?
I wish. No, we have our counselor that can somewhat do that to an extent. His father is dead. His father had an affair. My father passed away. He was a very solid man. But no, he doesn't have anyone in his life. And that was one of my contingencies. Is I told him, you need to go to Sex Addicts Anonymous. You need to go to something to have accountability. Because I said, you need someone to be accountable to. You're not accountable to God. Apparently, that's not enough for you. So I told him,
well, he's not accountable to you.
Someone to be accountable with.
Yeah. Now, is he willing to vacate?
At all. No. That's my problem. I need to give him some reason to be willing to vacate. He's not willing to vacate. He said that's not realistic.
Well, maybe here again, I'm just offering you some off-the-cuff opinions. Only a counselor who's got the training is adequately prepared to deal with this. I'm just offering some off-the-cuff remarks, and please understand that.
Sure.
If he decides he wants to stay there, I mean, it may be the very difficult thing to do, but maybe you move into a different place and you take the children with you. Fine.
Right.
If you're not going to leave, you're going to put us through that. Okay. Yeah. That's what we're going to have to do. But he clearly can't continue to have his cake and eat it too. He's lost the right.
Right. Exactly.
You have older kids who are out of the house, but you still have probably some teens and maybe even a couple younger kids.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're all inside the house still.
Are they? Okay. Well, one of the problems, not the biggest, but one of the problems is that he's destroyed his own credibility in the eyes of his children, or at least to the extent that they know about what's going on. You know, how can he tell them, be good, don't lie, do the right thing, mind your mother, clean your room? How can he tell them to do any of those things when he himself is a complete failure when it comes to honoring his own obligations? So that in itself is an intolerable situation for the kids to have to be scandalized on a daily basis by their father who is doing these things. Well, I'm only offering you my personal off-the-cuff opinions, Anne, but for whatever they're worth, I hope that's an encouragement to you. I think you are well within your rights to say, we can't live this way. And until you change, we're not going to live together.
Okay.
You know, I'm not divorcing you. I'm not walking out on you. But I am putting you on notice that unless you change, life as you knew it before is over.
Right. Okay. I just pray for the strength to do that. Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome, Ann. Get some good, good, good support from a good priest who's wise. Be choosy. Get some good support from men and women who can rally around you and encourage you. And we will pray for you, Ann. I promise you that. I'll be right back.